No! Queen Marie turned to the closet, pulled out a leather valise, and threw it on the table.
We're leaving, she announced. You can keep your protection. We're going north.
Marie, it's a trap, Pluto warned. Whoever's whispering in your ear, whoever's turning you against me.
You turned me against you.
She picked up a porcelain vase and threw it at him. It shattered on the floor, and precious stones spilled everywhere. Emeralds, rubies, diamonds. Hazel's entire collection.
You won't survive, Pluto said. If you go north, you'll both die. I can foresee that clearly.
Get out, she said.
Hazel wished Pluto would stay and argue. Whatever her mother was talking about, Hazel didn't like it. But her father slashed his hand across the air and dissolved into shadows, like he really was a spirit. Queen Marie closed her eyes. She took a deep breath. Hazel was afraid the strange voice might possess her again, but when she spoke, she was her regular self.
Hazel, she snapped, come out from behind that door.
Trembling, Hazel obeyed. She clutched the sketch pad and colored pencils to her chest. Her mother studied her like she was a bitter disappointment.
A poisoned child, the voices had said.
Pack a bag, she ordered. We're moving.
Where? Hazel asked.
Alaska, Queen Marie answered. You're going to make yourself useful. We're going to start a new life.
The way her mother said that, it sounded as if they were going to create a new life for someone else. Or something else.
What did Pluto mean? Hazel asked. Is he really my father? He said you made a wish.
Go to your room, her mother shouted. Pack!
Hazel fled, and suddenly she was ripped out of the past. Nico was shaking her shoulders.
You did it again,
Hazel blinked. They were still sitting on the roof of Pluto's shrine. The sun was lower in the sky, more diamonds had surfaced around her, and her eyes stung from crying.
Sorry, she murmured.
Don't be, Nico said. Where were you?
My mother's apartment, the day we moved.
Nico nodded. He understood her history better than most people could. He was also a kid from the 1940s. He'd been born only a few years after Hazel, and had been locked away in a magic hotel for decades. But Hazel's past was much worse than Nico's. She'd caused so much damage and misery.
You have to work on controlling those memories, Nico warned. If a flashback like that happens when you're in combat...
I know, she said. I'm trying.
Nico squeezed her hand.
It's okay. I think it's a side effect from, you know, your time in the underworld.
Hopefully it'll get easier.
Hazel wasn't so sure. After 8 months, the blackout seemed to be getting worse, as if her soul were attempting to live in two different time periods at once. No one had ever come back from the dead before, at least not the way she had. Nico was trying to reassure her, but neither of them knew what would happen.
I can't go north again, Hazel said. Nico, if I have to go back to where it happened...
You'll be fine, he promised. You'll have friends this time. Percy Jackson, he's got a role to play in this. You can sense that, can't you? He's a good person to have at your side.
Hazel remembered what Pluto told her long ago.
A descendant of Neptune will wash away your curse and give you peace.
Was Percy the one?
Maybe, but Hazel sensed it wouldn't be so easy. She wasn't sure even Percy could survive what was waiting in the north.
Where did he come from? She asked. Why do the ghosts call him the Greek?
Before Nico could respond, horns blew across the river. The legionnaires were gathering for evening muster.
We'd better get down there, Nico said.
I have a feeling tonight's war games are going to be interesting.
Chapter 7 Hazel.
On the way back, Hazel tripped over a gold bar. She should have known not to run so fast, but she was afraid of being late for muster. The 5th cohort had the nicest centurions in camp. Still, even they would have to punish her if she was tardy. Roman punishments were harsh. Scrubbing the streets with a toothbrush, cleaning the bullpens at the Colosseum, getting sewn inside a sack full of angry weasels and dumped into the little Tiber. The options were not great. The gold bar popped out of the ground just in time for her foot to hit it. Nico tried to catch her, but she took a spill and scraped her hands.
You okay?
Nico knelt next to her and reached for the bar of gold.
Don't! Hazel warned.
Nico froze.
Right.
Sorry. It's just...
Jeez, that thing is huge.
He pulled a flask of nectar from his aviator jacket and poured a little on Hazel's hands. Immediately the cut started to heal.
Can you stand?
He helped her up. They both stared at the gold. It was the size of a bread loaf, stamped with a serial number and the words U.S. Treasury. Nico shook his head.
How in Tartarus?
I don't know, Hazel said miserably. It could have been buried there by robbers or dropped off a wagon 100 years ago. Maybe it migrated from the nearest bank vault. Whatever's in the ground, anywhere close to me, it just pops up, and the more valuable it is...
The more dangerous it is, Nico frowned.
Should we cover it up?
If the fawns find it. Hazel imagined a mushroom cloud billowing up from the road, char-broiled fawns tossed in every direction. It was too horrible to consider.
It should sink back underground after I leave, eventually. But just to be sure.
She'd been practicing this trick, but never with something so heavy and dense. She pointed at the gold bar and tried to concentrate. The gold levitated. She channeled her anger, which wasn't hard. She hated that gold. She hated her curse. She hated thinking about her past and all the ways she'd failed. Her fingers tingled. The gold bar glowed with heat. Nico gulped.
Hazel, are you sure?
She made a fist. The gold bent like putty. Hazel forced it to twist into a giant lumpy ring. Then she flicked her hand toward the ground. Her million-dollar donut slammed into the earth. It sank so deep nothing was left but a scar of fresh dirt. Nico's eyes widened.
That was terrifying.
Hazel didn't think it was so impressive compared to the powers of a guy who could reanimate skeletons and bring people back from the dead. But it felt good to surprise him for a change. Inside the camp, horns blew again. The cohorts would be starting roll call, and Hazel had no desire to be sewn into a sack of weasels.
Hurry,
she told Nico, and they ran for the gates. The first time Hazel had seen the Legion assemble, she'd been so intimidated she'd almost slunk back to the barracks to hide. Even after being at camp for 9 months, she still found it an impressive sight. The first 4 cohorts, each 40 kids strong, stood in rows in front of their barracks on either side of the Via Praetoria. The 5th cohort assembled at the very end, in front of the Principia, since their barracks were tucked in the back corner of camp next to the stables and the latrines. Hazel had to run right down the middle of the Legion to reach her place. The campers were dressed for war. Their polished chain mail and greaves gleamed over purple t-shirts and jeans. Sword and skull designs decorated their helmets. Even their leather combat boots looked ferocious with their iron cleats, great for marching through mud or stomping on faces. In front of the legionnaires, like a line of giant dominoes, stood their red and gold shields, each the size of a refrigerator door. Every legionnaire carried a harpoon-like spear called a pilum, a gladius, a dagger, and about 100 pounds of other equipment. If you were out of shape when you came to the Legion, you didn't stay that way for long. Just walking around in your armor was a full-body workout. Hazel and Nico jogged down the street as everyone was coming to attention, so their entrance was really obvious. Their footsteps echoed on the stones. Hazel tried to avoid eye contact, but she caught Octavian at the head of the 1st cohort smirking at her, looking smug in his plumed centurion's helmet with 12 medals pinned on his chest. Hazel was still seething from his blackmail threats earlier. Stupid Augur and his gift of prophecy. Of all the people at camp to discover her secrets, why did it have to be him? She was sure he would have told on her weeks ago, except that he knew her secrets were worth more to him as leverage. She wished she'd kept that bar of gold so she could hit him in the face with it. She ran past Reyna, who was cantering back and forth on her Pegasus, Scipio, nicknamed Skippy because he was the color of peanut butter. The metal dogs Aurum and Argentum trotted at her side. Her purple officer's cape billowed behind her.
"Hazel Levesque," she called. "So glad you could join us."
Hazel knew better than to respond. She was missing most of her equipment, but she hurried to her place in line next to Frank and stood at attention. Their lead centurion, a big 17-year-old guy named Dakota, was just calling her name, the last one on the roll.
"Present," she squeaked.
Thank the gods. Technically, she wasn't late. Nico joined Percy Jackson, who was standing off to one side with a couple of guards. Percy's hair was wet from the baths. He'd put on fresh clothes, but he still looked uncomfortable. Hazel couldn't blame him. He was about to be introduced to 200 heavily armed kids. The Lares were the last ones to fall in. Their purple forms flickered as they jockeyed for places. They had an annoying habit of standing halfway inside living people so that the ranks looked like a blurry photograph, but finally the centurions got them sorted out. Octavian shouted,
"Colors!"
The standard-bearers stepped forward. They wore lion-skin capes and held poles decorated with each cohort's emblems. The last to present his standard was Jacob, the Legion's eagle-bearer. He held a long pole with absolutely nothing on top. The job was supposed to be a big honor, but Jacob obviously hated it. Even though Reyna insisted on following tradition, every time the eagle-less pole was raised, Hazel could feel embarrassment rippling through the Legion. Reyna brought her Pegasus to a halt.
"Romans," she announced. "You've probably heard about the incursion today. Two Gorgons were swept into the river by this newcomer, Percy Jackson. Juno herself guided him here and proclaimed him a son of Neptune."
The kids in the back rows craned their necks to see Percy. He raised his hand and said,
"Aye." "He seeks to join the Legion," Reyna continued. "What do the auguries say?" "I have read the entrails," Octavian announced, as if he'd killed a lion with his bare hands rather than ripping up a stuffed panda pillow. "The auguries are favorable. He is qualified to serve."
The campers gave a shout.
"Ave! Hail!"
Frank was a little late with his ave, so it came out as a high-pitched echo. The other legionnaires snickered. Reyna motioned the senior officers forward, one from each cohort. Octavian, as the most senior centurion, turned to Percy.
"Recruit," he asked. "Do you have credentials? Letters of reference?"
Hazel remembered this from her own arrival. A lot of kids brought letters from older demigods in the outside world, adults who were veterans of the camp. Some recruits had rich and famous sponsors. Some were third or fourth generation campers. A good letter could get you a position in the better cohorts, sometimes even special jobs like Legion Messenger, which made you exempt from the grunt work like digging ditches or conjugating Latin verbs. Percy shifted.
"Letters? No.
Octavian wrinkled his nose.
"Unfair,"
Hazel wanted to shout. Percy had carried a goddess into camp. What better recommendation could you want? But Octavian's family had been sending kids to camp for over a century. He loved reminding recruits that they were less important than he was.
"No letters," Octavian said regretfully. "Will any legionnaires stand for him?"
"I will," Frank stepped forward. "He saved my life."
Immediately there were shouts of protest from the other cohorts. Reyna raised her hand for quiet and glared at Frank.
"Frank Jong," she said. "For the second time today, I remind you that you are on probatio. Your godly parent has not even claimed you yet. You're not eligible to stand for another camper until you've earned your first stripe."
Frank looked like he might die of embarrassment. Hazel couldn't leave him hanging. She stepped out of line and said,
"What Frank means is that Percy saved both our lives. I am a full member of the Legion. I will stand for Percy Jackson.
Frank glanced at her gratefully, but the other campers started to mutter. Hazel was barely eligible. She'd only gotten her stripe a few weeks ago, and the act of valor that earned it for her had been mostly an accident. Besides, she was a daughter of Pluto and a member of the disgraced fifth cohort. She wasn't doing Percy much of a favor by giving him her support. Raina wrinkled her nose, but she turned to Octavian. The augur smiled and shrugged, like the idea amused him. Why not? Hazel thought. Putting Percy in the fifth would make him less of a threat, and Octavian liked to keep all his enemies in one place.
Very well, Raina announced. Hazel Levesque, you may stand for the recruit. Does your cohort accept him?
The other cohort started coughing, trying not to laugh. Hazel knew what they were thinking. Another loser for the fifth. Frank pounded his shield against the ground. The other members of the fifth followed his lead, though they didn't seem very excited. Their centurions, Dakota and Gwen, exchanged pained looks, like, here we go again.
My cohort has spoken, Dakota said. We accept the recruit.
Raina looked at Percy with pity.
Congratulations, Percy Jackson. You stand on probatio. You will be given a tablet with your name and cohort. In 1 year's time, or as soon as you complete an act of valor, you will become a full member of the 12th Legion Fulminata. Serve Rome, obey the rules of the Legion, and defend the camp with honor. Senatus populusque Romanus.
The rest of the Legion echoed the cheer. Raina wheeled her Pegasus away from Percy, like she was glad to be done with him. Skippy spread his beautiful wings. Hazel couldn't help feeling a pang of envy. She'd give anything for a horse like that, but it would never happen. Horses were for officers only, or barbarian cavalry, not for Roman legionnaires.
Centurions, Raina said, you and your troops have 1 hour for dinner. Then we will meet on the field of Mars. The first and second cohorts will defend. The third, fourth, and fifth will attack. Good fortune!
A bigger cheer went up, for the war games and for dinner. The cohorts broke ranks and ran for the mess hall. Hazel waved at Percy, who made his way through the crowd with Nico at his side. To Hazel's surprise, Nico was beaming at her.
Good job, sis, he said. That took guts, standing for him.
He had never called her sis before. She wondered if that was what he had called Bianca. One of the guards had given Percy his probatio nameplate. Percy strung it on his leather necklace with the strange beads.
Thanks, Hazel, he said. What exactly does it mean, you're standing for me?
I guarantee your good behavior, Hazel explained. I teach you the rules, answer your questions, make sure you don't disgrace the Legion.
And if I do something wrong?
Then I get killed along with you, Hazel said. Hungry? Let's eat.
Chapter 8 Hazel. At least the camp food was good. Invisible wind spirits, Ori, waited on the campers and seemed to know exactly what everyone wanted. They blew plates and cups around so quickly the mess hall looked like a delicious hurricane. If you got up too fast, you were likely to get beaned by beans or potted by a pot roast. Hazel got shrimp gumbo, her favorite comfort food. It made her think about being a little girl in New Orleans, before her curse set in and her mom got so bitter. Percy got a cheeseburger and a strange-looking soda that was bright blue. Hazel didn't understand that, but Percy tried it and grinned.
This makes me happy, he said. I don't know why, but it does.
Just for a moment, one of the Ori became visible. An elfin girl in a white silk dress. She giggled as she topped off Percy's glass, then disappeared in a gust. The mess hall seemed especially noisy tonight. Laughter echoed off the walls. War banners rustled from cedar ceiling beams as Ori blew back and forth, keeping everyone's plates full. The campers dined Roman style, sitting on couches around low tables. Kids were constantly getting up and trading places, spreading rumors about who liked whom and all the other gossip. As usual, the fifth cohort took the place of least honor. Their tables were at the back of the dining hall next to the kitchen. Hazel's table was always the least crowded. Tonight it was she and Frank, as usual, with Percy and Nico and their centurion Dakota, who sat there, Hazel figured, because he felt obligated to welcome the new recruit. Dakota reclined glumly on his couch, mixing sugar into his drink and chugging it. He was a beefy guy with curly black hair and eyes that didn't quite line up straight, so Hazel felt like the world was leaning whenever she looked at him. It wasn't a good sign that he was drinking so much so early in the night.
"So," he burped, waving his goblet, "welcome to the Percy party."
He frowned.
"Party, Percy, whatever."
"Thanks," Percy said, but his attention was focused on Nico.
"I was wondering if we could talk, you know, about where I might have seen you before."
"Sure," Nico said a little too quickly. "The thing is, I spend most of my time in the underworld, so unless I met you there somehow..." Dakota belched.
"Ambassador from Pluto, they call him. Raina's never sure what to do with this guy when he visits. You should have seen her face when he showed up with Hazel, asking Raina to take her in. No offense."
"None taken." Nico seemed relieved to change the topic. "Dakota was really helpful, standing for Hazel." Dakota blushed.
"Yeah, well, she seemed like a good kid. Turned out I was right last month when she saved me from, you know."
"Oh, man!" Frank looked up from his fish and chips. "Percy, you should have seen her. That's how Hazel got her stripe. The unicorns decided to stampede."
"It was nothing," Hazel said.
"Nothing?" Frank protested.
"Dakota would have gotten trampled. You stood right in front of them, shooed them away, saved his hide. I've never seen anything like it."
Hazel bit her lip. She didn't like to talk about it, and she felt uncomfortable, the way Frank made her sound like a hero. In truth, she'd been mostly afraid that the unicorns would hurt themselves in their panic. Their horns were precious metal, silver and gold, so she'd managed to turn them aside simply by concentrating, steering the animals by their horns and guiding them back to the stables. It had gotten her a full place in the Legion, but it had also started rumors about her strange powers, rumors that reminded her of the bad old days. Percy studied her. Those sea-green eyes made her unsettled.
"Did you and Nico grow up together?" he asked.
"No," Nico answered for her. "I found out that Hazel was my sister only recently. She's from New Orleans." That was true, of course, but not the whole truth. Nico let people think he'd stumbled upon her in modern New Orleans and brought her to camp. It was easier than telling the real story. Hazel had tried to pass herself off as a modern kid. It wasn't easy. Thankfully, demigods didn't use a lot of technology at camp. Their powers tended to make electronic gadgets go haywire. But the first time she went on furlough to Berkeley, she had nearly had a stroke. Televisions, computers, iPods, the internet. It made her glad to get back to the world of ghosts, unicorns, and gods. That seemed much less of a fantasy than the 21st century. Nico was still talking about the children of Pluto.
"There aren't many of us," he said, "so we have to stick together. When I found Hazel..."
"You have other sisters?"
Percy asked, almost as if he knew the answer. Hazel wondered again when he and Nico had met and what her brother was hiding.
"One," Nico admitted, "but she died. I saw her spirit a few times in the underworld, except that the last time I went down there..."
To bring her back, Hazel thought, though Nico didn't say that.
"She was gone."
Nico's voice turned hoarse.
"She used to be in Elysium, like the underworld paradise, but she chose to be reborn into a new life. Now I'll never see her again. I was just lucky to find Hazel. In New Orleans, I mean."
Dakota grunted.
"Unless you believe the rumors. Not saying that I do."
"Rumors?" Percy asked.
From across the room, Don the Fawn yelled, "Hazel!" Hazel had never been so glad to see the fawn. He wasn't allowed in camp, but of course he always managed to get in. He was working his way toward their table, grinning at everybody, sneaking food off plates and pointing at campers.
"Hey! Call me!"
A flying pizza smacked him in the head, and he disappeared behind a couch. Then he popped up, still grinning, and made his way over.
"My favorite girl!"
He smelled like a wet goat wrapped in old cheese. He leaned over their couches and checked out their food.
"Say, new kid, you going to eat that?"
Percy frowned.
"Aren't fawns vegetarian?"
"Not the cheeseburger, man. The plate."
He sniffed Percy's hair.
"Hey, what's that smell?"
"Don," Hazel said. "Don't be rude."
"No. Man, I just..."
Their house god, Vitellius, shimmered into existence, standing half-embedded in Frank's couch.
"Fawns in the dining hall? What are we coming to? Centurion Dakota, do your duty."
"I am," Dakota grumbled into his goblet. "I'm having dinner."
Don was still sniffing around Percy.
"Man, you've got an empathy link with a fawn."
Percy leaned away from him.
"A what?"
"An empathy link. It's real faint, like somebody suppressed it, but..."
"I know what." Nico stood suddenly. "Hazel, how about we give you and Frank time to get Percy oriented? Dakota and I can visit the Praetor's table. Don and Vitellius, you come too. We can discuss strategies for the war games."
"Strategies for losing?" Dakota muttered.
"Death Boy is right," Vitellius said. "This Legion fights worse than we did in Judea. That was the first time we lost our eagle. Why, if I were in charge..."
"Could I just eat the silverware first?"
Don asked.
"Let's go."
Nico stood and grabbed Don and Vitellius by the ears. Nobody but Nico could actually touch the Larrys. Vitellius spluttered with outrage as he was dragged off to the Praetor's table.
"Ow!"
Don protested.
"Man, watch the fro!"
"Come on, Dakota,"
Nico called over his shoulder. The centurion got up reluctantly. He wiped his mouth, uselessly, since it was permanently stained red.
"Back soon."
He shook all over, like a dog trying to get dry. Then he staggered away, his goblet sloshing.
"What was that about?" Percy asked. "And what's wrong with Dakota?"
Frank sighed.
"He's okay. He's a son of Bacchus, the wine god. He's got a drinking problem."
Percy's eyes widened. "You let him drink wine?"
"Gods, no," Hazel said. "That would be a disaster. He's addicted to red Kool-Aid. Drinks it with 3 times the normal sugar, and he's already ADHD. You know, attention deficit hyperactive. One of these days, his head is going to explode."
Percy looked over at the Praetor's table. Most of the senior officers were in deep conversation with Reyna. Nico and his 2 captives, Don and Vitellius, stood on the periphery. Dakota was running back and forth along a line of stacked shields, banging his goblet on them like they were a xylophone.
"ADHD, Percy said. "You don't say."
Hazel tried not to laugh.
"Well, most demigods are. Or dyslexic. Just being a demigod means that our brains are wired differently. Like you, you said you had trouble reading."
"Are you guys that way too?" Percy asked.
"I don't know," Hazel admitted. "Maybe. Back in my day, they just called kids like us lazy."
Percy frowned.
"Back in your day?"
Hazel cursed herself. Luckily for her, Frank spoke up.
"I wish I was ADHD or dyslexic. All I got is lactose intolerance."
Percy grinned.
"Seriously?"
Frank might have been the silliest demigod ever, but Hazel thought he was cute when he pouted. His shoulders slumped.
"And I love ice cream, too."
Percy laughed. Hazel couldn't help joining in. It was good to sit at dinner and actually feel like she was among friends.
"Okay, so tell me," Percy said. "Why is it bad to be in the 5th cohort? You guys are great."
The compliment made Hazel's toes tingle.
"It's complicated. Aside from being Pluto's kid, I want to ride horses."
That's why you use a cavalry sword? She nodded.
It's stupid, I guess. Wishful thinking. There's only one Pegasus at camp. Rhaena's. The unicorns are just kept for medicine because the shavings off their horns cure poison and stuff. Anyway, Roman fighting is always done on foot. Cavalry, they kind of look down on that. So they look down on me.
Their loss, Percy said. What about you, Frank?
Archery, he muttered. They don't like that either, unless you're a child of Apollo. Then you've got an excuse. I hope my dad is Apollo, but I don't know. I can't do poetry very well, and I'm not sure I want to be related to Octavian.
Can't blame you, Percy said. But you're excellent with the bow. The way you pegged those gorgons? Forget what other people think.
Frank's face turned as red as Dakota's Kool-Aid.
Wish I could. They all think I should be a sword fighter because I'm big and bulky.
He looked down at his body like he couldn't quite believe it was his.
They say I'm too stocky for an archer. Maybe if my dad would ever claim me.
They ate in silence for a few minutes. A dad who wouldn't claim you. Hazel knew that feeling. She sensed Percy could relate, too.
You asked about the fifth, she said at last. Why, it's the worst cohort. That actually started way before us.
She pointed to the back wall where the Legion's standards were on display.
See the empty pole in the middle?
The eagle, Percy said.
Hazel was stunned.
How'd you know?
Percy shrugged.
Vitellius was talking about how the Legion lost its eagle a long time ago. The first time, he said. He acted like it was a huge disgrace. I'm guessing that's what's missing. And from the way you and Rhaena were talking earlier, I'm guessing your eagle got lost a second time, more recently, and it had something to do with the fifth cohort.
Hazel made a mental note not to underestimate Percy again. When he'd first arrived, she'd thought he was a little goofy from the questions he'd asked about the Feast of Tuna and all, but clearly he was smarter than he let on.
You're right, she said. That's exactly what happened.
So, what is this eagle anyway? Why is it a big deal?
Frank looked around to make sure no one was eavesdropping.
It's the symbol of the whole camp. A big eagle made of gold. It's supposed to protect us in battle and make our enemies afraid. Each legion's eagle gave it all sorts of power, and ours came from Jupiter himself. Supposedly, Julius Caesar nicknamed our legion Fulminata, armed with lightning, because of what the eagle could do.
I don't like lightning, Percy said.
Yeah, well, Hazel said, it didn't make us invincible. The 12th lost its eagle the first time way back in ancient days, during the Jewish rebellion.
I think I saw a movie like that, Percy said.
Hazel shrugged.
Could be. There have been lots of books and movies about legions losing their eagles. Unfortunately, it happened quite a few times. The eagle was so important. Well, archaeologists have never recovered a single eagle from ancient Rome. Each legion guarded theirs to the last man because it was charged with power from the gods. They'd rather hide it or melt it down than surrender it to an enemy. The 12th was lucky the first time. We got our eagle back. But the second time...
You guys were there? Percy asked.
They both shook their heads.
I'm almost as new as you, Frank tapped his probatio plate. Just got here last month,
but everyone's heard the story. It's bad luck to even talk about this. There was this huge expedition to Alaska back in the 80s.
That prophecy you noticed in the temple, Hazel continued. The one about the 7 demigods and the doors of death? Our senior praetor at the time was Michael Varus, from the 5th cohort. Back then, the 5th was the best in camp. He thought it would bring glory to the Legion if he could figure out the prophecy and make it come true. Save the world from storm and fire and all that. He talked to the augur, and the augur said the answer was in Alaska. But he warned Michael it wasn't time yet. The prophecy wasn't for him.
But he went anyway, Percy guessed. What happened?
Frank lowered his voice.
Long, gruesome story. almost the entire 5th cohort was wiped out. Most of the Legion's Imperial gold weapons were lost, along with the eagle. The survivors went crazy, or refused to talk about what had attacked them.
I know, Hazel thought solemnly, but she kept silent.
Since the eagle was lost, Frank continued, the camp has been getting weaker. Quests are more dangerous. Monsters attack the borders more often. Morale is lower. The last month or so, things have been getting much worse, much faster.
And the 5th cohort took the blame, Percy guessed. So now everyone thinks we're cursed. Hazel realized her gumbo was cold. She sipped a spoonful, but the comfort food didn't taste very comforting. We've been the outcasts of the Legion since, well, since the Alaska disaster. Our reputation got better when Jason became Praetor.
The kid who's missing? Percy asked.
Yeah, Frank said. I never met him before my time, but I hear he was a good leader. He practically grew up in the 5th cohort. He didn't care what people thought about us. He started to rebuild our reputation. Then he disappeared.
Which put us back at square one, Hazel said bitterly. Made us look cursed all over again. I'm sorry, Percy. Now you know what you've gotten yourself into.
Percy sipped his blue soda and gazed thoughtfully across the dining hall.
I don't even know where I come from. But I've got a feeling this isn't the first time I've been an underdog.
He focused on Hazel and managed to smile. Besides, joining the Legion is better than being chased through the wilderness by monsters. I've got myself some new friends. Maybe together we can turn things around for the 5th cohort, huh? A horn blew at the end of the hall. The officers at the Praetor's table got to their feet, even Dakota, his mouth vampire red from Kool-Aid.
The games begin, Reyna announced.
The campers cheered and rushed to collect their equipment from the stacks along the walls.
So we're the attacking team? Percy asked over the noise. Is that good?
Hazel shrugged.
Good news? We get the elephant. Bad news?
Let me guess, said Percy.
The 5th cohort always loses.
Frank slapped Percy on the shoulder.
I love this guy. Come on, new friend. Let's go chalk up my 13th defeat in a row.
Chapter 9. Frank. As he marched to the war games, Frank replayed the day in his mind. He couldn't believe how close he'd come to death. That morning on sentry duty, before Percy showed up, Frank had almost told Hazel his secret. The two of them had been standing for hours in the chilly fog, watching the commuter traffic on Highway 24. Hazel had been complaining about the cold.
I'd give anything to be warm, she said, her teeth chattering. I wish we had a fire.
Even with her armor on, she looked great. Frank liked the way her cinnamon toast-colored hair curled around the edges of her helmet, and the way her chin dimpled when she frowned. She was tiny compared to Frank, which made him feel like a big, clumsy ox. He wanted to put his arms around her to warm her up, but he'd never do that. She'd probably hit him, and he'd lose the only friend he had at camp. I could make a really impressive fire, he thought. Of course, it would only burn for a few minutes, and then I'd die. It was scary that he even considered it. Hazel had that effect on him. Whenever she wanted something, he had the irrational urge to provide it. He wanted to be the old-fashioned knight riding to her rescue, which was stupid, as she was way more capable at everything than he was. He imagined what his grandmother would say.
Frank Chong riding to the rescue? Ha! He'd fall off his horse and break his neck.
Hard to believe it had only been 6 weeks since he'd left his grandmother's house. 6 weeks since his mom's funeral. Everything had happened since then. Wolves arriving at his grandmother's door, the journey to Camp Jupiter, the weeks he'd spent in the 5th cohort trying not to be a complete failure. Through it all, he'd kept the half-burned piece of firewood wrapped in a cloth in his coat pocket.
Keep it close, his grandmother had warned. As long as it is safe, you are safe.
The problem was that it burned so easily. He remembered the trip south from Vancouver, when the temperature dropped below freezing near Mount Hood.
Frank had brought out the piece of tinder and held it in his hands, imagining how nice it would be to have some fire. Immediately, the charred end blazed with a searing yellow flame. It lit up the night and warmed Frank to the bone, but he could feel his life slipping away, as if he were being consumed rather than the wood. He'd thrust the flame into a snowbank. For a horrible moment, it kept burning. When it finally went out, Frank got his panic under control. He wrapped the piece of wood and put it back in his coat pocket, determined not to bring it out again, but he couldn't forget it. It was as though someone had said, "Whatever you do, don't think about that stick bursting into flame." So, of course, that's all he thought about. On sentry duty with Hazel, he would try to take his mind off it. He loved spending time with her. He asked her about growing up in New Orleans, but she got edgy at his questions, so they made small talk instead. Just for fun, they tried to speak French to each other. Hazel had some Creole blood on her mother's side. Frank had taken French in school. Neither of them was very fluent, and Louisiana French was so different from Canadian French, it was almost impossible to converse. When Frank asked Hazel how her beef was feeling today, and she replied that his shoe was green, they decided to give up. Then Percy Jackson had arrived. Sure, Frank had seen kids fight monsters before. He'd fought plenty of them himself on his journey from Vancouver. But he'd never seen Gorgons. He'd never seen a goddess in person. And the way Percy had controlled the little Tiber. Wow. Frank wished he had powers like that. He could still feel the Gorgon's claws pressing into his arms and smell their snaky breath, like dead mice and poison. If not for Percy, those grotesque hags would have carried him away. He'd be a pile of bones in the back of a bargain mart by now. After the incident at the river, Raina had sent Frank to the armory, which had given him way too much time to think. While he polished swords, he remembered Juno, warning them to unleash death. Unfortunately, Frank had a pretty good idea of what the goddess meant. He had tried to hide his shock when Juno had appeared, but she looked exactly like his grandmother had described, right down to the goatskin cape. "She chose your path years ago," Grandmother had told him, "and it will not be easy." Frank glanced at his bow in the corner of the armory. He'd feel better if Apollo would claim him as a son. Frank had been sure his godly parent would speak up on his 16th birthday, which had passed 2 weeks ago. 16 was an important milestone for Romans. It had been Frank's first birthday at camp, but nothing had happened. Now Frank hoped he would be claimed on the Feast of Fortuna, though from what Juno had said, they'd be in a battle for their lives on that day. His father had to be Apollo. Archery was the only thing Frank was good at. Years ago, his mother had told him that their family name, Zhang, meant Master of Bows in Chinese. That must have been a hint about his dad. Frank put down his polishing rags. He looked at the ceiling. "Please, Apollo, if you're my dad, tell me. I want to be an archer like you."
"No, you don't," a voice grumbled.
Frank jumped out of his seat. Vitellius, the fifth cohort's Lar, was shimmering behind him. His full name was Gaius Vitellius Reticulus, but the other cohorts called him Vitellius the Ridiculous.
"Hazel Levesque sent me to check on you," Vitellius said, hiking up his sword belt. "Good thing, too. Look at the state of this armor."
Vitellius wasn't one to talk. His toga was baggy, his tunic barely fit over his belly, and his scabbard fell off his belt every 3 seconds. But Frank didn't bother pointing that out.
"As for archers," the ghost said, "they're wimps. Back in my day, archery was a job for barbarians. A good Roman should be in the fray, gutting his enemy with spear and sword like a civilized man. That's how we did it in the Punic Wars. Roman up, boy."
Frank sighed. "I thought you were in Caesar's army."
"I was."
"Vitellius, Caesar was hundreds of years after the Punic Wars. You couldn't have been alive that long."
"Questioning my honor?
Vitellius looked so mad, his purple aura glowed. He drew his ghostly gladius and yelled,
"Take that!"
He ran the sword, which was about as deadly as a laser pointer, through Frank's chest a few times.
"Ouch," Frank said, just to be nice.
Vitellius looked satisfied and put his sword away.
"Perhaps you'll think twice about doubting your elders next time. Now, it was your 16th birthday recently, wasn't it?"
Frank nodded. He wasn't sure how Vitellius knew this, since Frank hadn't told anyone except Hazel, but ghosts had ways of finding out secrets. Eavesdropping while invisible was probably one of them.
"So that's why you're such a grumpy gladiator," Lalar said. "Understandable. The 16th birthday is your day of manhood. Your godly parents should have claimed you, no doubt about it. Even if with only a small omen. Perhaps he thought you were younger. You look younger, you know, with that pudgy baby face."
"Thanks for reminding me," Frank muttered.
"Yes, I remember my 16th,
Vitellius said happily.
"Wonderful omen. A chicken in my underpants."
"Excuse me?"
Vitellius puffed up with pride.
"That's right. I was at the river, changing my clothes for my liberalia. Rite of passage into manhood, you know. We did things properly back then. I'd taken off my childhood toga and was washing up to don the adult one. Suddenly, a pure white chicken ran out of nowhere, dove into my loincloth, and ran off with it. I wasn't wearing it at the time."
"That's good," Frank said. "And can I just say, too much information?"
Vitellius wasn't listening.
"That was the sign I was descended from Aesculapius, the god of medicine. I took my cognomen, my third name, Reticulus, because it meant undergarment, to remind me of the blessed day when a chicken stole my loincloth."
"So, your name means Mr. Underwear?"
"Praise the gods! I became a surgeon in the Legion, and the rest is history."
He spread his arms generously.
"Don't give up, boy. Maybe your father is running late. Most omens are not as dramatic as a chicken, of course. I knew a fellow once who got a dung beetle."
"Thanks, Vitellius," Frank said. "But I have to finish polishing this armor."
"And the Gorgon's blood?"
Frank froze. He hadn't told anyone about that. As far as he knew, only Percy had seen him pocket the vials at the river, and they hadn't had a chance to talk about it.
"Come now," Vitellius chided. "I'm a healer. I know the legends about Gorgon's blood. Show me the vials."
Reluctantly, Frank brought out the two ceramic flasks he'd retrieved from the little Tiber. Spoils of war were often left behind when a monster dissolved. Sometimes a tooth, or a weapon, or even the monster's entire head. Frank had known what the two vials were immediately. By tradition, they belonged to Percy, who had killed the Gorgons. But Frank couldn't help thinking, what if I could use them?
"Yes," Vitellius studied the vials approvingly. "Blood taken from the right side of a Gorgon's body can cure any disease, even bring the dead back to life. The goddess Minerva once gave a vial of it to my divine ancestor Aesculapius. But blood taken from the left side of a Gorgon, instantly fatal. So, which is which?"
Frank looked down at the vials.
"I don't know. They're identical."
"Ha! But you're hoping the right vial could solve your problem with the burned stick, eh? Maybe break your curse?"
Frank was so stunned he couldn't talk.
"Oh, don't worry, boy," the ghost chuckled. "I won't tell anyone. I'm a Lar, a protector of the cohort. I wouldn't do anything to endanger you."
"You stabbed me through the chest with your sword."
"Trust me, boy. I have sympathy for you, carrying the curse of that Argonaut."
"The what?"
Vitellius waved away the question.
"Don't be modest. You've got ancient roots, Greek as well as Roman. It's no wonder Juno."
He tilted his head, as if listening to a voice from above. His face went slack. His entire aura flickered green.
But I've said enough. At any rate, I'll let you work out who gets the Gorgon's blood. I suppose that newcomer Percy could use it, too, with his memory problem.
Frank wondered what Vitellius had been about to say and what had made him so scared, but he got the feeling that for once Vitellius was going to keep his mouth shut. He looked down at the two vials. He hadn't even thought of Percy's needing them. He felt guilty that he'd been intending to use the blood for himself.
Yeah, of course.
He should have it.
Ah, but if you want my advice...
Vitellius looked up nervously again.
You should both wait on that Gorgon blood. If my sources are right, you're going to need it on your quest.
Quest?
The doors of the armory flew open. Reyna stormed in with her metal greyhounds. Vitellius vanished. He might have liked chickens, but he did not like the Praetor's dogs.
Frank! Reyna looked troubled. That's enough with the armor. Go find Hazel. Get Percy Jackson down here. He's been up there too long. I don't want Octavian.
She hesitated.
Just get Percy down here.
So Frank had run all the way to Temple Hill. Walking back, Percy had asked tons of questions about Hazel's brother, Nico, but Frank didn't know that much.
He's okay, Frank said. He's not like Hazel.
How do you mean? Percy asked. Frank coughed. He'd meant that Hazel was better looking and nicer, but he decided not to say that.
Nico is kind of mysterious. He makes everybody else nervous, being the son of Pluto and all.
But not you? Frank shrugged.
Pluto's cool. It's not his fault he runs the underworld. He just got bad luck when the gods were dividing up the world, you know? Jupiter got the sky, Neptune got the sea, and Pluto got the shaft.
Death doesn't scare you? Frank almost wanted to laugh.
Not at all. Got a match?
Instead, he said,
back in the old times, like the Greek times, when Pluto was called Hades, he was more of a death god. When he became Roman, he got more, I don't know, respectable. He became the god of wealth, too. Everything under the earth belongs to him, so I don't think of him as being real scary.
Percy scratched his head.
How does a god become Roman? If he's Greek, wouldn't he stay Greek?
Frank walked a few steps, thinking about that. Vitellius would have given Percy an hour-long lecture on the subject, probably with a PowerPoint presentation, but Frank took his best shot.
The way Romans saw it, they adopted the Greek stuff and perfected it.
Percy made a sour face.
Perfected it? Like there was something wrong with it?
Frank remembered what Vitellius had said.
You've got ancient roots, Greek as well as Roman.
His grandmother had said something similar.
I don't know, he admitted. Rome was more successful than Greece. They made this huge empire. The gods became a bigger deal in Roman times, more powerful and widely known. That's why they're still around today. So many civilizations base themselves on Rome. The gods changed to Roman because that's where the center of power was. Jupiter was, well, more responsible as a Roman god than he had been when he was Zeus. Mars became a lot more important and disciplined.
And Juno became a hippie bag lady, Percy noted. So you're saying the old Greek gods, they just changed permanently to Roman? There's nothing left of the Greek?
Frank looked around to make sure there were no campers or Larrys nearby, but the main gates were still 100 yards away.
That's a sensitive topic. Some people say Greek influence is still around, like it's still a part of the gods' personalities. I've heard stories of demigods occasionally leaving Camp Jupiter. They reject Roman training and try to follow the older Greek style, like being solo heroes instead of working as a team the way the Legion does. And back in the ancient days, when Rome fell, the eastern half of the empire survived. The Greek half.
Percy stared at him.
I didn't know that.
It was called Byzantium.
Frank liked saying that word. It sounded cool. The Eastern Empire lasted another 1,000 years, but it was always more Greek than Roman. For those of us who follow the Roman way, it's kind of a sore subject. That's why, whatever country we settle in, Camp Jupiter is always in the west, the Roman part of the territory. The east is considered bad luck.
Huh. Percy frowned.
Frank couldn't blame him for feeling confused. The Greek-Roman stuff gave him a headache, too. They reached the gates.
"I'll take you to the bath to get you cleaned up," Frank said. "But first, about those vials I found at the river."
"Gorgon's blood," Percy said. "One vial heals. One is deadly poison." Frank's eyes widened.
"You know about that? Listen, I wasn't going to keep them. I know why you did it, Frank."
"You do?"
"Yeah," Percy smiled. "If I'd come into camp carrying a vial of poison, that would have looked bad. You were trying to protect me."
"Oh, right."
Frank wiped the sweat off his palms. "But if we could figure out which vial was which, it might heal your memory." Percy's smile faded. He gazed across the hills.
"Maybe. I guess.
But you should hang on to those vials for now. There's a battle coming. We may need them to save lives." Frank stared at him, a little bit in awe. Percy had a chance to get his memory back, and he was willing to wait in case someone else needed the vial more? Romans were supposed to be unselfish and help their comrades, but Frank wasn't sure anyone else at camp would have made that choice.
"So you don't remember anything?" Frank asked. "Family? Friends?"
Percy fingered the clay beads around his neck. "Only glimpses. Murky stuff. A girlfriend. I thought she'd be at camp." He looked at Frank carefully, as if making a decision. "Her name was Annabeth." "You don't know her, do you?" Frank shook his head.
"I know everybody at camp, but no Annabeth." "What about your family? Is your mom mortal?"
"I guess so. She's probably worried out of her mind. Does your mom get to see you much?" Frank stopped at the bathhouse entrance. He grabbed some towels from the supply shed.
"She died."
Percy knit his brow.
"How?"
Usually Frank would lie. He'd say an accident and shut off the conversation. Otherwise his emotions got out of control. He couldn't cry at Camp Jupiter. He couldn't show weakness. But with Percy, Frank found it easier to talk.
"She died in the war," he said. "Afghanistan."
"She was in the military?"
"Canadian, yeah."
"Canada? I didn't know..."
"Most Americans don't," Frank sighed. "But yeah, Canada has troops there. My mom was a captain. She was one of the first women to die in combat. She saved some soldiers who were pinned down by enemy fire. She didn't make it. The funeral was right before I came down here."
Percy nodded. He didn't ask for more details, which Frank appreciated. He didn't say he was sorry or make any of the well-meaning comments Frank always hated. "Oh, you poor guy. That must be so hard on you. You have my deepest condolences." It was like Percy had faced death before, like he knew about grief. What mattered was listening. You didn't need to say you were sorry. The only thing that helped was moving on, moving forward.
"How about you show me the baths now?" Percy suggested. "I'm filthy."
Frank managed to smile.
"Yeah, you kind of are."
As they walked into the steam room, Frank thought of his grandmother, his mom, and his cursed childhood, thanks to Juno and her piece of firewood. He almost wished he could forget his past the way Percy had. Chapter 10. Frank. Frank didn't remember much about the funeral itself, but he remembered the hours leading up to it, his grandmother coming out into the backyard to find him shooting arrows at her porcelain collection. His grandmother's house was a rambling graystone mansion on 12 acres in North Vancouver. Her backyard ran straight into Lynn Canyon Park. The morning was cold and drizzly, but Frank didn't feel the chill. He wore a black wool suit and a black overcoat that had once belonged to his grandfather. Frank had been startled and upset to find that they fit him fine. The clothes smelled like wet mothballs and jasmine. The fabric was itchy, but warm. With his bow and quiver, he probably looked like a